Welcome to the Av Podcast with Cal C, part of South Shore Ave Radio, which you can get to at southshoreave.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the blog and the pod, once again, at southshoreave.com. First of all, I'd like to thank all the listeners and the supporters of this new venture that I'm doing with this podcast. I've received a lot of great support, a lot of love and kind words. It's been humbling, to say the least. You know, I hope I'm doing everybody proud. I will continue doing more of these. This is something that I've always kind of wanted to do or get into this kind of medium. It's very cool to see the response, especially from the first show, which was very well received once again. And I would like to thank everybody, including most importantly my brother Curtis, who did the first, who was my first guest on my show. And it, like I said again, it was very humbling to hear some of the responses and, you know, the kind words and the support that I got. And I would love to continue to do you guys proud. And, you know, hopefully this will be bigger and better. I shouldn't say hopefully. Being positive, it will be bigger and better. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you someone to the podcast that not only am I honored to call him my friend, and I treat him like family, but also has a very accomplished basketball career for himself. He was honored not too long ago into the Jean Vanier High School Athletics Hall of Fame. He had one of the most accomplished basketball careers at Ryerson University, which I can say that I was a part of and I got to see witness firsthand, who then also parlayed that into a lengthy playing career overseas in Europe. And this is very important here, contrary to what you might hear on Twitter, he's actually a pretty good person. So with that...
Yeah, you had to put that one in, right? Yeah, you couldn't leave it alone.
I couldn't come clean. I got to give you a little dig.
Okay.
All right, so... Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the podcast, I'd like to welcome you, Jan Michael Nation, to the Av. Welcome, Mr. Nation.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor to be on here. Heard the first podcast with your brother. I thought it was amazing. I'm proud of you, man. So let's do this, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Of course, we're here to talk hoops. Hoops today. It's all about the present day of the NBA. Love to get into... What's the biggest stories of this year, Jan? So far, it's what? The Golden State Warriors, how they've just been dominating everybody in the NBA so far. Of course, Steph Curry has been like something that I've... You only exist on NBA Jam, maybe?
Yeah, he's pretty much doing video game stuff in reality right now, which is nuts. But what I... how can I categorize it? What I like about it this season is that he's been consistent. You could tell that he's been to work in the offseason. The mind state for the games, staying hungry. I think even though last year they won the championship, I think they still had a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
In a sense of that people don't respect what they did. They got lucky, so to speak. So just the fact that the whole team is moving in unison as one unit is amazing. So you got to give props to, obviously, Steph Curry, the whole team, and the coaching staff.
Well, to speak on that chip on the shoulder, what I felt, and I wrote about this a few months back, what I loved about this season as well is just how July happened. So, for example, everybody started talking about how after the Warriors won that, you know, was semi-fluke, or, you know, people didn't think they deserved to win, or, you know, better yet, that, you know, this is a passing facade. Once Cleveland gets healthy, once the Spurs get healthy or get more players, that's it. You know, that's going to be the end of their reign. And then to me, I think, which is the underrated most important part of the summer, which I think happened, was the NBA Players Association had the award show, and they gave James Harden the Players MVP. And then the talk out of that award show was everybody was saying that, well, you know what? This guy is the real MVP. Now,
yeah.
Now, if you're any kind of athlete that has a heart in his chest, the level of disrespect you got to feel after having the season that you had, and then hearing that a month later, like how would you approach training camp? Wouldn't you approach it like a Navy SEAL at that point?
Most definitely. Oh, most definitely. For me personally, it doesn't take much to motivate me. I'm a little bit of a maniac when it comes to working out and staying in shape and so forth. But right. I can only imagine the mindset that they had. Plus, you have a guy like Draymond Green, so you could tell that he's the engine, he's their vocal leader, mm-hmm. and once again, he's self motivated. So you could tell these guys had it out this summer. After the championship win, that they had something to prove.
Yeah, and sorry, go ahead.
You can't take away, like, even though Steve Kerr was his first year as a coach, his experience. Played with Michael Jordan. He's won championships with the Bulls. Right. He's won championships with San Antonio. Yeah. He's been there. He's been in the trenches. So his influence as a puppet master and behind the scenes is huge as well.
Well, another thing I'll add too is that, of course, everything led to this season that they're having. Right now they're on pace to get 73 wins. Right now they're about a game ahead of the Bulls.
Yeah.
What they were. What they were achieving back in 1996. What's happened now is that they're getting this incredible record. They're right now, I believe, they're 63-7, which is, after 70 games, the best record in NBA history.
Yeah.
All the accolades, everything else that goes along with them achieving achieving the goal that they've had this season. The greatest part of this, Jan, is that the Spurs are right there.
Yeah, they're right there. Yeah.
And which all came to a head last Saturday.
Under the radar, completely under the radar.
And this is like the perfect season, I would say, for Coach Pop, because
yes. He
would love nothing more to just rest under the laurels, just hide in the shadows for the regular season, and then just come to life in the playoffs. So
yeah.
The fact that they're close to getting 70 wins and nobody's even really talking about them. You couldn't script this any better for Coach Pop, right?
Yeah.
So which led to everything on Saturday, of course, the past game just a few days ago, and of course they beat the Warriors and kept their undefeated home streak.
Yes.
At 35-0, as far as I believe. Now, what I loved about the game, Nation, is that they basically controlled the pace, which is something we've been kind of waiting for to see somebody do that to Golden State this year. Because even in the times that they've lost, every team has basically played at Golden State's pace, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so far they've had like just an incredible season, and the Spurs are right there matching them almost step for step. And what I loved is that they controlled the pace of that game on Saturday. What I loved is that what they did to Steph Curry as well. So I don't know if you remember the playoffs back in 2013 when Golden State met up against San Antonio.
Yeah, it came up short.
Yeah, but the first three games, Curry was going off. And then by the middle of the series, they basically took control of that. They got Curry.
Yeah.
They got Kawhi Leonard. They got Danny Green. And they basically just strong arm Curry. Smothered him for the rest of the series. And we got a taste of that on Saturday. Because they were just constantly switching. And I mean, not even just between Green and Kawhi. They were switching from big men. They were switching from Patty Mills, Tony Parker. Everybody was getting a piece of Curry.
I think. Sorry, I'll let you finish.
No, go ahead.
I think what I gathered, I agree with you 110%. But what I gathered was, this is a great team. This is an amazing team. Pop's mentality was, okay, we're going to take some things away from you and give. You can't take everything away, but we're going to take away your strengths and see how you adjust accordingly. So if you notice during the game, even on switches, sometimes they double-teamed Curry. They got the ball out of his hands
right. With
anticipation of letting Draymond Green hurt them, either through the three-point shot or attacking. Draymond Green leads the team on assists. He has more assists than Curry, I believe. And he's Curry's 1A, Draymond Green is 1B in the sense of importance for their offense.
Yeah.
He does whatever they need, he fills the void. He's like a switchblade knife. Whatever that needs to get done, either it's scoring, playing defense, passing, facilitating for shots, he gets the ball usually off of that double team on Curry. He gets the ball roughly at the three-point line. He's usually attacking the basket for a straight drive, or he's kicking out to either one of the shooters on the wing. And a lot of teams, they catch teams constantly switching, running around, and it's like, it looks like chaos, but it's organized chaos mm-hmm. with these guys. They have these micro bursts of runs. You can have them down 10, 15. They could gobble that up in minutes.
Right.
But, yeah, Saturday's game was a great game because it had, like, a playoff feel towards it. I was on the edge of my seat. I was just happy to get a good basketball game where you know San Antonio's going to run their offense. You have two great teams that have two great
completely different
systems.
Styles, yeah. Two completely
you know,
different
two
styles.
Two different styles, but the system is very strong. And they have their players that know their roles that fit into each part.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I you know what? I totally agree with that. And what I loved about it is not only did it remind me of the 2013 playoffs, but even last year, and this is why I really wanted to see the Spurs play Golden State last year, is the last game that that the Spurs played against Golden State, I believe it was in San Antonio, and the Spurs beat them, right?
Yeah.
And what I loved is, and you could probably catch this on YouTube, there's a highlight of Curry dribbling the ball up the court against Kawhi Leonard, and Kawhi picked his pocket right at half
yeah.
court. And that right there was a symbolism of, man, if these teams meet, boy, I don't know who's going to win, right? That's what you were thinking last year, right? But then, of course, the Spurs, they lost to the Clippers in that great seven-game series. And, obviously that went straight to hell after that. But, that was kind of like the symbol that, again, that we can see that kind of matchup. And how is that going to play out for seven games, right?
Yeah.
And like I said, as great as the Spurs have been playing, like, they've been in the fast lane driving, driving over everybody in the league. And every time they look in the rearview mirror, here's San Antonio right behind them.
Right behind them,
Not only that, they're kind of shifting like 2 inches to the left and putting the high beams on in the rearview mirror. So it just so it blinds their glare a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like I said again, it's been, I mean, I've never seen anything like this where there's you have possibly two teams that could actually go for 70. Although after the loss to the Hornets for San Antonio last night, by the way, this is being taped on Tuesday night. I don't know if they're going to get to 70 wins now, but just the fact that they're just pressuring.
They're knocking
Golden
on the
State.
Door, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much for this whole time, and like I said again, and I got to say something else too. Watching Tim Duncan play 8 minutes is probably a testament to the Spurs culture over the last 18 years.
Oh, without a doubt. It's about, this is what, I coach a lot of kids, and the first thing I always tell them, it's about selfless acts, doing what's best for the team.
Right.
The ball has energy. When everyone touches it, everyone is in unison working together to achieve a common goal, which is to get the win. And I think it's lost at times. I'm watching all these teams, and I'm watching, for example, Houston Rockets with Harden.
Don't get me started.
I know. It's horrible basketball because he does a lot offensively. He is a wizard. You can't knock his game. But from a team's aspect, they're not working. They're not efficient enough. And they'll only go so far. You got Dwight Howard. I'm not a big Dwight Howard fan, but they're not using him efficiently.
Right.
Harden works so hard to either get to the line, to either take pull-up shots, contested shots. It's not – the system isn't strong enough, and it will get exposed in the playoffs. During the regular season, you can get away with it because you might come across a 76ers or a Lakers team or maybe a Minnesota team, you know what I mean? But during the playoffs, when you have 2 days in between each game, you have a coaching staff is trying to break you down, you're not going to get those plays off.
Now, let me ask you a question, though. Do you think that's part of the system that they're running, or is that partly just Harden
trying
to play
a role? I think it's the system. They don't seem like a team. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have they have the good pieces around the two of them in a sense of Harden and Dwight Howard. You have Ariza, you have Jason Terry, who's an old wily vet. You have Beverly, who's a grinder on defense. He's a pest on point guards. You have what's that guy's name? Skinny guy. It's not coming to me right now.
Corey Brewer.
Corey Brewer, who's a defensive offensive guy too. He plays both ends. They've had the pieces. It's just ugly basketball.
Well, think about this. I'll just take you back to basics. Think about when you go to, like, a pickup run, right?
Yeah.
And you're playing with, you know, say, like, you have a set group of guys that you like to kind of play with. And then you step on the court, and there's this one guy that comes in. And every time he gets the ball, it's a black hole, right?
Yeah.
Just think of how you feel when it's like 5-5 and the ball gets in his hands and he takes like a 30-foot three that wildly misses, and then the other team comes and executes and scores. And this is just in a pickup run, right?
Yeah.
How frustrated was you feel, you know, just in that? And you're just playing for free, right, on a weeknight or on the weekend, right?
Yeah.
So now imagine if you're a multimillionaire, and everybody's got an ego. You might be playing a role, but everybody in the NBA can play. Right.
Yeah.
And if you don't, and as you said before, the ball has energy. If you don't feel like you have any kind of responsibility in terms of, like, if you're not getting the ball, any touches at any point in time, you start to lose interest. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think the NBA is transitioning a little bit. Mm-hmm. They're going away from the hero ball in the sense of the superstar ball with the super teams and all that. And the last couple of years, you've had two teams that have played team basketball. Last two champions have been Spurs and Golden State.
Right.
And team basketball.
And again.
And that Spurs championship, that was, hey, I was in Miami. I was going for LeBron and those guys. Hey? That was a beat down.
Well, not just that. That was probably some of the most beautiful basketball that you could watch. Like, if you're trying to teach somebody the game of basketball, that series would have been a perfect testament to that, right? You would have been.
Yeah.
You could have sat somebody on the couch and say, this is how you play basketball. Look at everybody touching the ball.
Just the ball movement. It's ridiculous.
Look at the cuts in the screens. Look at how everybody's sacrificing for each other, right?
Yeah, but but once again, it goes back to the system. They have a strong system that they could lean on that could get them offense when they're in a rut. When they go stray off a course, the system will be consistent. So, for example, you have 10 possessions. Out of 10 possessions, if you're scoring 6 to 8 times, that's good offense.
No, of course.
When you're playing hero ball and you're scoring 2 to 3 times out of 10 possessions, that's not good. That's not going to help you in the long run.
And you know, it's funny, you mentioned Houston, but I'll throw another team in there that does the hero ball stuff, and I never properly rate this team anymore. I'm speaking about Oklahoma City.
Oh, big time. Now, another one.
Now, to me, they have top to bottom, I think, personally, they have the most talented roster in the NBA, right?
Yes.
But the fact that Westbrook, and I don't care about the triple-double stats, like, all that's great, but the decisions that him and even Kevin Durant make towards the end of games, you can see there's a lack of trust, right?
I think
the biggest example of the lack of trust in that system, to me, is Serge Ibaka. Right, like when you watch Serge Ibaka now, and I had him on my fantasy team, and I had to trade him at some point. Shout out to Marco, who I traded him to. Sorry, I apologize. Actually, I'm not really that sorry. But so basically, when you watch him, and he's a skilled big man, right, who has an outside shot. When I see him play now, he's spending most of the time shooting 17, 18 footers or shooting threes. Now, mind you, we can hit some of them, but when you look at the stats. For a guy that's such a, especially on defense, he's such a great presence on the floor.
Yeah.
He doesn't impact the. He barely impacts the games now. Like you look at some of the stats, sometimes he'll have 11 points, 4 rebounds, a block, you know, 3 threes, and you're sitting there like that's not what Serge Ibaka was there to do, right?
I agree to a certain extent, but I disagree with you because he's not a back. He's not to a sorry. But, backup post-up player. He's a face-up guy. He's a jump-shooting big forward.
And
so they use him to space the floor.
Right.
So if you help or double the likes of Westbrook or Durant, then you kick it out to him, and he has to hit that shot. They brought in Cantor. Cantor was the key because he could score off the block each post. He has great post moves, and he's an offensive. He's an offensive juggernaut in the sense of grabbing offensive rebounds. He's a pain in the ass, but defensively he's horrible.
Right.
But once again, to be honest with you, they brought in Billy Donovan and they fired Scott Brooks,
and nothing changed.
I don't see too much of a difference
right.
in the sense of the schemes and the offense. I see a little bit of Flurini it's more fluent in a sense. It was a little bit more ball movement. They got some plays here and there, but it's still the same thing.
But Nation, and this is what I'll say about your point there, talking about Ibaka. I agree that, yes, he is a face-up shooter, but he had that same kind of game about 4 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So you thought at some point he would have developed somewhat of an inside game that they can kind of go to and be, like, especially when once they released and they let go, they let James Harden leave, I figured absolutely for sure he's going to be the third guy. Right,
yeah.
especially offensively, because he has a nice touch, right?
Yeah,
and but that's I don't think he's being utilized. And when you watch like the end of games, like you just see it's either okay, this is Westbrook's turn. Okay, now it's my turn, and now it's Kevin Durant's turn. Now it's okay. Well, now I got to give it back to Westbrook. You know, and it's back and forth.
Their team doesn't have a good bench either. So if you notice what I've noticed in a few games, I've seen quite a bit of their games this season.
Right.
What Billy Donovan does is he can't afford to have both Westbrook and Durant off at the same time. So what he does is he has them on with the bench players to ensure that at least they have some type of level of firepower that can score.
But that's not good, though, because, again...
Exactly.
Again,
the system is not strong enough.
But yeah, the system's not strong enough, but again... They have the most talented roster in the league. So Durant and Westbrook should be able to sit down for 5 minutes, Dan. You know what I mean?
Those guys should score. Their bench doesn't score consistently. They just don't score. I don't know if it's pressure. I don't know what it is. Deion Waiters, up and down, up and down, up and down. They brought Foy in recently. It looks like he's still trying to get acclimated into the plays and just find the rhythm.
Yeah, Kyle Singler is kind of just there.
Yeah. It's a struggle. It's like it's so weird because there's a stat out there. They have the most fourth quarter collapses in NBA this season. They're ahead of the likes of the 76ers. They've had the most leads going into a fourth quarter and losing a game. I think it's like either 13 or 14 times.
But again,
I think
go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay. I think it's. There's a lot that comes in. The system is not strong enough. These guys, Westbrook, they're holding them too much. They're doing way too much.
Yeah, and again, but I think that's that. As you said, that it speaks to the level of lack of trust that these guys have. The fact that they're losing this, like, how can you lose that much leads in the fourth quarter when you have two of the five or six best players in the NBA right now? And,
listen,
and
when you're
both
tired,
guys are in their primes.
The fourth quarter, you don't realize it. You don't even realize it. So I for my days of playing, your fourth quarter, you play a lot of minutes up until this point. You don't even realize you're tired.
So yeah.
Your legs, your first thing that goes is your legs. We don't have enough oxygen to the brain. That's when you start making mental errors. Mm-hmm. Hence, the likes of Westbrook. I watched him play, who was it? The Clippers. Clippers were down like almost 20
oh,
points.
Oh, like I remember that, yeah.
And they collapsed.
Yeah, him,
the bench
him and
brought
Durant.
Them back.
Yeah. Yeah,
the bench brought them. Clippers. The bench of Clippers brought them back. Then Doc Rivers mixed in a couple bench players with the starters, and the comeback was set. They came back. They took the lead. Westbrook came back, and then tried to do a leaning three, trying to draw the foul. He didn't get the call. The shot went off the end of the backboard. Clippers got the ball, coming back to go up now to build on the lead. And I was just like, mental errors.
Yeah,
down the stretch.
And again, just to touch on my original point, this and talking about Tim Duncan. I mean, mind you, yeah, he's almost 40 years old and everything else. But for the past 18 years, having that rock in your foundation for the past for that length of time. I mean, he was the one that came in back in 1988. He received the knowledge from the veterans, especially from David Robinson. You know, he was great immediately and sustained that greatness for years, you know, for decades and everything else. And then now he's passing that along to the likes of LaMarcus Aldridge, Kawhi Leonard, and everybody else. But just the fact that a guy like him can sit back, sacrifice, play 8 minutes. And if you watched him, he was damn near like a cheerleader on the bench.
Oh yeah,
you know.
And so it's about once again, it's about he's yeah. Think about it. He's accomplished a lot. He's accomplished a lot. MVP. He's got an MVP, doesn't he? Yeah, he's got an MVP.
He's got two.
He's got MVP.
And plus, he's the best power forward of all time.
Oh, without a doubt. No questions for me on that one.
Right.
I agree 110%. He's got the championships. He's got the MVPs. He's been in a truckload of wars over the years.
Yeah.
It's at the end of the day, it's about the win. What's best for the team? Yeah. I'm a part of it. He knows his limitations. He knows what he could give and what he can't. And he stays within himself. That's what you have to respect that. And I hope, like sometimes I watch the younger generations and I'm wondering, what are you guys watching? Are you watching what these guys, the selfless acts that these guys have?
No.
Or are you just watching the hero ball and all the theatrics?
Well,
the circus shots and all that stuff, you know?
And that's what the Spurs get blamed for, right? And it drives me crazy as a basketball lover, just in the sense that you always hear these conversations of, well, you know what, the Spurs are boring and this and this and that. And Jan, honestly, to me, the Spurs haven't been boring to me for the last 10 years. If you watch them play basketball, the way they move the ball, and especially when Ginobili was in his prime, like, how can you think that guy's boring?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
And even to this day, he's still not boring now.
He's still doing it. I don't know how he's still standing up. Here's another stat for you. Do you know how much Tony Parker scored?
How much?
He didn't score. He didn't score. You know what his contribution to that table, or to that game, I should say, was? Playing defense. He played the best defense I've seen him play in his career.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That was the best he's ever seen him play.
I totally agree with that.
And I was just like, psychologically, the Spurs needed this win. They needed this win for a psychological edge. They lost bad in Golden State. Was it a month prior? That was a bad 3-point loss. That was a ass whooping.
Yeah,
in the shed, butt whooping. This game was like they needed this for psychological reasons. They needed this win.
And not just that, but I think it's just to put that small nugget in Golden State's head that to say, number one, don't rest because we're right behind you. Number two, when you come here, this is what's going to happen.
We can beat you. We will beat you.
This is what's going to happen as long as you come to San Antonio. Yeah. So you know what? Forget trying to get 73 wins. You better get this home court advantage because if we get it, you might not go back to the finals again.
I think, as much as good as the Golden State has been, you got to take looking back at the Chicago Bulls, what they did, I remember saying to myself, I don't think there's another team that will have the mental fortitude to do this in this modern era. So hats off to the Golden State team. With that said, chasing this record could be a detriment to them.
You think so?
Without a doubt. A, you could be wearing yourself out. So it's interesting now. It's the last 10 games, pretty much, of the season left. Now, do you rest guys, or do you still stay within the concept of just chasing for the record?
You know what?
Because
though?
you don't want to peak early and run out of steam heading into the playoffs and trying to find your rhythm all over again.
I hear you, but you know what though? There's very few times in life where you can achieve these kind of things, right?
I agree. Yeah.
And I think because of that, I think they should go for it. But I think once they get it, then, you know, especially if there's some games left over, let's say there's like two or three games left, then you sit back and you rest the Currys, you rest Thompson, you rest Green and everybody else just to, you know, make sure that the legs are a little bit fresh for the playoffs. But I think just out of necessity, I think they almost have to go for it just because San Antonio's only, like, again, they're four games behind. So, you know, they go on a two-game losing streak. Guess what? San Antonio is like
right
just a snap of a finger away.
Yeah.
Right. So I think out of necessity, they almost have to do this. Right.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. So keep that in mind. So they can wear themselves out heading into the playoffs. Okay. And then the Western Conference. That's not going to be a cakewalk.
Well, I agree. I agree with that. And actually, what I was going to say, too, is that I think that if the cards play out correctly, the Spurs and the Warriors series that could potentially be in May. The end of May, I think that's going to be probably the best Western Conference Finals
in a long time.
Since the Lakers and the Kings of 2002,
Western Conference Finals. Man, you hurt me, man. You know, you hurt me. You're that guy, yeah? You know I'm a Weber fan. You know I was a Weber fan, man. You know that hurt. But I agree. I agree with you 110%. But let's take a step back before you get to the finals. I think the top four teams, theoretically, Golden State, San Antonio, OKC, and the Clippers should be the semifinals. The Western semifinals should be good.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And just for rivalry purposes, I hope the Clippers and the Warriors meet. I think they need to meet in the playoffs again, because that the last time they needed 2 years
here
ago.
But here again, if OKC comes across San Antonio, that's going to be a tough matchup for San Antonio.
Yeah, I agree too. Because listen, as much as a few minutes ago that we were talking about Durant and Westbrook being almost like two Will Smiths. on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on the floor, just pass it to Will, at least you know, like that kind of offense that they have. I mean, they're on, like I said again, they're two of the top six players in the NBA, if not top five. They're incredibly hard to stop, and they seem to, I wouldn't say they have San Antonio's number, because that's not exactly true, because the last time they met in the playoffs, San Antonio did win, but again, it was a serious struggle, right?
Yeah,
and my thing again is that just the way the Spurs are playing, how smart they are, I think that's going to expose OKC every time. And the same thing goes to the Clippers as well. I think that, and one thing I'll say about the Clippers is this: I love Chris Paul. I think Chris Paul is an amazing point guard. He has been for the last 13 years. The problem I have with the Clippers is that until Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan take over the mantle of that team, it doesn't matter what they do, because I think with Chris Paul, you already know what you're gonna get from him, right? Like, he's hit his ceiling, he's gonna be great. You know what you're gonna get from him every night. But I think until Blake Griffin and DeAndre, I've been saying this for years, until the two of them, like, you know, exude their influence on these games.
Well, in his absence, in Blake Griffin's absence, the two of them, DeAndre Jordan and CP3, have been balling.
Yeah,
I agree. I agree with you.
But they're gonna need Blake.
They have to. Yeah, they're gonna need Blake to stand a chance.
I almost don't even count these games, even though they've been playing well without him. Because to me, I don't care about the regular season with the Clippers anymore. I just care about the playoffs now. What are you gonna do? As I say, don't show me. Don't tell me about the labor pains. Show me the baby now, right?
So
when it comes to them, I just want to see Blake influence, like just use his, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not just his influence, but just his athleticism, everything else on the game. Because even last year, as I know what you're going to say, on when they played Houston,
this is their problem. They gave so much in that Spurs series, right? They gave so much to get there. When they got to Houston, they're only going seven deep. They ran out of gas because they went up 3-1.
You think that's what it was?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Without a doubt, they ran out of gas. They were tired.
You know what?
You can't. Okay. As a coach, you have your starting five.
Right.
You're trying to make sure the rhythms. Your best five guys that play together as a team. That's your five starters. But you also want to develop your bench. You have. So through six through eight, or maybe nine guys. Hopefully 10 if you're lucky.
Yeah, you want to get to at least nine in the playoffs. Like a solid nine.
You have
nine
a
rotation.
Second unit. You have a second unit that, so when you make your subs to the second unit, there's not too much of a drop off, right?
Right.
This year their bench is a lot better, so I'm intrigued to see what's going to happen in the playoffs, because when they have leads, the bench doesn't lose it for them. It either maintains it or boosts it.
But I'll disagree with you in this regard. I watched that game six where they completely imploded. When they're up by 20 points with like 2 minutes to go in the third quarter of game six.
Yeah, that was bad.
And you got to remember, James Harden came off the court. He sat on the floor. Like, he was thinking about, you know, going to King of Diamonds the very next night. Like, he was done.
Yeah.
He was mentally done. Everything was finished. And when Houston made that run, you could see that look on, cause I don't even think it was fatigue. You can just see the look on Blake's face. You can see the look on DeAndre's face that they were shell-shocked. They didn't know what to do, you know? Yeah. And again, it's like, instead of just taking it right back to Houston, they froze. And from once I saw that, and right, but like, even before Houston took the lead, I said, man, the Clippers are in trouble. Because again, you like, as good as Chris Paul is, I think those guys have to take that mantle away, and they got to exude their confidence, their physical and mental presence on these games now. And as much as talented as Blake Griffin is, and I'm a big Blake Griffin supporter, I think just physically, he's one of the most physically dominating players in the NBA that we have today, and he doesn't always use that. You know what I mean? Especially in these pressurized games, like these playoff games, like that last, like the last year's series, it just, it disappointed me, man. Like that fourth quarter, just, it disappointed me. I didn't even care to watch the game seven because of just the look on their face that I saw in game six.
Right? Houston took over the momentum. They got the momentum. They won that game. They won that game four.
Right.
And they won. They stole game five. And they had, because game seven was in Houston, wasn't it?
Right, it was in Houston, and it wasn't really a game.
Yeah, right. It was over.
Now the beauty of if you want to take the one positive of Blake punching his friend in the face and missing 3 months, is that his legs might be fresh. He might be looking at these games through a fresh set of eyes now, and maybe now he's looking at these games like, okay, where can I fit in? You know, where can I, you know, like throw my jab here? Where can I throw this uppercut here? You know, I'm wondering if that's how he's, I'm hoping that's how he's approaching these upcoming games.
Oh, you would hope so, but he has to take another, I thought last year with the Spurs series, he took another step. Even the whole season, he was quite consistent. He evolved.
Definitely. His skill set is amazing.
He did the same thing before he got injured. He was doing some good things. He was in the conversation for MVP earlier on in the season. But it'll be interesting to see when he comes back how they bring him back and how he has to get his legs underneath him again. When you're gone for that long, about rhythm, finding your rhythm again and getting acclimated back in the scheme of things.
Right. The rust factor for sure is gonna kick in, but. I mean, last year he was an MVP candidate, I thought too, right? And again, he's extremely skilled. He's extremely skillful. But even with that being said, I still think he still has another level.
It's mental.
Yeah, right now it's mental. He has another level that he can get to, right?
Yeah. If you remember, sorry to go off topic, but if you remember LeBron James that year when they made it to the finals with the Dallas Mavericks. He didn't have the mental fortitude to handle all that stuff that was coming at him, all the hate that was coming at him.
Yeah.
So he broke. He broke down, and the world laughed at him for it.
The next year,
that series with Boston, when they were down, he broke it. He broke free.
I hear you, but you know what? Number one, I don't necessarily feel sorry for him because, number one, that was self-inflicted.
Right? Oh, without a doubt.
It was self-inflicted. I mean, I personally should have never went to Miami in the first place. The second part is, and I'm actually going to get to this in a few minutes, with Cleveland, when LeBron was there the first time, and I still sort of believe this, even now to this day, Jan, that like when the pressure really comes to the surface, I really do believe, and I'm not saying this in every situation, right, because I don't want to call him a choke artist. He's not a choke artist, but I feel like there's opportunities where you can break LeBron, right? And you saw in that Dallas series, the year before you saw it in that Boston series when I think it was game five of that Boston series where everybody wondered what happened. And I'm sure if everybody wants to go and research, Google Delonte West and 2010 playoff series, you know, you'll get a lot of stories from that. I won't even get into that. But, he had those mental breakdowns. I still believe that second title that they won in Miami – if Ray Allen didn't hit that shot, actually, I'll take even before that. When they're up three and Parker hit that three in LeBron's face, you saw the wires start busting in his head. Like you saw his brain start to fry right there on the spot. And then next thing you know, the Spurs took the lead and they were up. I think believe they were up five, and you can just see in LeBron's head he just wasn't. You know, it was as great as the game he played. You can see that they got to him. But, you know, and I look at that, and I'm going to get to this part with the Raptors, that Cleveland is only now one and a half games ahead of, as of this podcast, they're 1.5 games ahead of the Raptors. Now, I'm not saying the Raptors are going to beat Cleveland, but there is a scenario that if Toronto can get to the conference finals, first of all, and they can really apply that pressure to Cleveland, I think there is an opportunity where you can
see an upset.
You can possibly break LeBron again.
I disagree, and I'll tell you why. Here's my reason. I feel just going off of what he did in the playoffs last year in the finals, I don't see him letting that happen. I think he'll be a man determined. Anything outside of winning a championship is going to be a bust for this guy. Secondly, I don't think Toronto, once again, when it comes to a system, Toronto is a good team. Once again, Raptor fans, any Raptor fans out there, I'm going to speak the truth and nothing but the truth. But I don't think their system is strong enough for a deep run. If I truly believe DeMarre Carey is going to be a huge factor, depending on what he can do on that one leg, defensively and on the wings,
yeah,
DeMar DeRozan isn't a good defensive player.
Not to cut you off, but yeah, with DeMarre Carey, which is funny. I mean, we're hearing late March, but we don't know for sure when he's actually really coming back. So sorry, go ahead, continue. Go ahead.
Okay. Secondly, like right now, he needs to get back. Like if they're going to bring him back, they're going to have to bring him back within the last 10 games of the season so he can catch his rhythm with these guys.
Right?
When you have a leg injury, it's going to take a while it's going to take like a full year to get that strength back in. Hence, off topic again, Kobe. Beginning of the year, he was horrible. Now you see when he's playing, he has his legs underneath him. He has more time after the surgery. His legs was getting the strength again. Because before, you could tell he's struggling out there trying to find. He didn't have the lift on his legs, so he had to rediscover his shot.
Plus,
release point of his shot.
Yet it didn't stop him from taking 30 shots a game. But go on, continue.
Exactly. He doesn't care. Of course, he doesn't care. So, like, once again, going back to the Raptors, it's going to be interesting to see what he brings to the table. Is he going to be that same player that he is defensively? Because he's a two-way player.
Yeah,
he plays
he's a solid
both
player.
Offense and defense.
Solid player.
He complements Lowry and DeRozan very well because he doesn't need the ball to be effective. These guys do, so it's good. He helps them. He spaces the floor. He moves well without the ball. That will help. But once again, the system isn't strong enough for a deep run. If they get matched up with the likes of Chicago Bulls,
don't say that. Shh, don't say that.
What?
Let's not talk about that. Shh. Oh, Chicago, we don't know them. Let's not mention that.
Don't kill me. The fact that they lost to Chicago off of the break, and Chicago didn't have a... who was I missing? They didn't have Butler, and they let... what's that white guy's name again? Oh, my goodness. I just saw him. He went off on both games.
Pau Gasol.
They weren't... No, no, the other guy, the guard, the shooter.
Mike Dunleavy.
The other one.
Shh. Stop talking about it.
Okay, I'll transition out of there slowly. I'll do a segue out of there. But it's going to be intriguing to see how the Eastern Conference playoffs start. Who's going to be, like, how all the teams get aligned? Who's Toronto going to face? If they face, like, the likes of Charlotte, Chicago, it's going to be friggin' problems.
Now, do you think it's important for Toronto to get the number one seed for their psyche?
Yeah, without a doubt. The easier the playoff. I agree, I do, but they got to get out of the first round.
That's the most important part, right? And what I'll say is this too: like last year, they had a chance, and I can't believe they haven't won 50 games yet for the franchise history, which is amazing to me.
Yeah.
So obviously,
they've been mediocre. They've been mediocre for decades.
Yeah,
though, man. And after Vince left, right? You know what I mean? Chris Bosh, they had a couple runs with Chris Bosh, but nothing really that was serious, right?
Right.
Last year's team was a trailblazing team in the sense that they came in second, they won the division, they broke a whole bunch of records along the way. They beat up on, like, I called it. I didn't call it the sweep, but I said Washington is not a regular season team. They are a playoff team. When the playoffs start, it's all about that playoff experience. Paul Pierce had these guys hungry and ready to play.
Yeah.
His influence on that team was huge. And the fact that it was disgusting that they came into Toronto and they beat them convincingly, those guys gave up in that playoff series. I felt so bad for the Raptor fans. These guys were traveling all over the country to support these guys, and these guys gave up on them.
Yeah,
all the games.
But I do think a couple of things here. That one, I think they've you can see how they've played this year, and especially the example of Kyle Lowry coming in looking like the CrossFit MVP. The way he's come in and played this season and continued to basically stay in shape, which is amazing to say for an athlete, but I mean, but it's true. Like the way he's played this season, I think they've learned from that series. I think that series they've taken that to heart. Now, I'll just say this, not to cut you out, but I'll just say this. Now, I think getting the number one seed is really important. It would be great for the psyche, but here's where I think they differ from last year's Atlanta team. Last year's Atlanta team, as much as I like them, and I wrote about them last year too, I really enjoyed watching them play because they personified everything that you want to see in a team playing atmosphere.
The
yeah, they're the Spurs of the East. They swung the ball. They had four all-stars on the team. Everything was great. The problem was that when it came to crunch time, they had four good players, four all-stars, but they didn't have that one guy to say, you know what, ride my coattails for the next 5 minutes. Let me, even if I don't score, let me create something where I can put you guys in a better place. They didn't have anybody like that. I thought Jeff Teague should have been that guy, but I don't think he fully realized that. And now he kind of, this season, he's kind of taking a little bit of a step back. Yeah. Now with the Raptors, I think where they differ is I think they have two guys that can basically say, you know what, get on my back, right? Which is Lowry and DeRozan, of course. So I think that's where they kind of differ from that Atlanta team. And then the second part is, I said this a few minutes ago, where I think they might have a shot to do real damage in the playoffs is if they continue to move the ball around and they lean on the defense. Because
here's where I'm gonna cut you off.
Okay, go ahead.
I agree with you. Their defense is amazing. They play great team defense. I am not sold on Dwayne Casey's offense.
Okay,
when
fair
things
enough.
Go awry, the fair system enough. Is not strong enough. That's why I don't. I'm not. I think, you know, theoretically, they could most likely get out of the first round, but anything after that is going to be very hard because their offensive execution isn't the greatest. When things go awry, if you notice, the ball moves, and when DeRozan gets it, it sticks. So it all depends on what his mind state is. If he's trying to do a hero ball, like the two of them have been balling of late.
Oh, they've been playing great.
So, yeah. But when the defense, what playoffs is a different beast. It's a different beast,
no,
man.
Of course. I totally agree with that. But I think, you know, the last 2 years of not being able to make the first round, I think, because, you know, in the playoffs, that's the one thing about the playoffs, and especially in basketball, you got to fall before you get to the next plateau.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, the Raptors
last
have fallen.
Last year was a fall off, but they fell off the cliff.
They've fallen, but like I said again, at least they're showing right now, and again, this is the regular season, so we don't know what's going to happen next month, but I think they are learning from that. I think Kyle Lowry, to be honest, I think he should be on one of the All-NBA teams, whether it's the second team or the third team. But I think he's been playing that well all season consistently. And
and
like I said again, once you lean on the defense in the playoffs and muddy that game up, anything is possible, man. And
okay, you're right. Anything's possible. But okay, they don't use Valanciunas well enough offensively.
And they never have.
They never have.
Yeah.
He should be taking on average a good 15 shots.
Right.
For a game. I don't think his offensive game is polished enough to my liking, but he deserves. He's been there long enough. He signed a contract extension. He should be taking more shots. They should use him. And especially in the half. Okay, in the transition, obviously he's not quick enough to run the floor, but in the transition, in the half court sets, they got to get this guy the ball a little bit more. You know?
I agree. The Biyombo guy is
balling.
Let me tell you something about Biyombo. I don't care if you were his family member. You could have been his brother or his sister or his woman or his side piece. You didn't see this coming at all,
no.
Right?
No.
Like nobody saw this coming. The most I remember from Biyombo was the defensive player from Charlotte who had the worst hands I've ever seen. And seeing this now where he's hitting, you know, jumpers from
taking
the free throw line.
Jumpers,
he's making post moves. I mean, like anything is possible, man. Like Kevin Garnett said, like I've never seen this transformation, but it's just, I'm stunned by this. Him and I can't lie to you, Jan. I didn't expect this from Corey Joseph. Shout out to his dad. I love David Joseph.
Played ball with him in so many men leagues when I was in high school.
Him and DJ. Yeah, and I've known him since I was like 12 years old. I've known him since I was a little kid. I got so much love for him, but I didn't see this coming. Like I really didn't, and especially after how Team Canada played this past summer, I thought he would be a good pickup, a nice pickup, but I didn't see this. I mean, Jan, he's finishing every game, and he absolutely deserves to be there.
Once again, he got drafted into the perfect situation.
Of course,
he got drafted. If you notice, they brought him along carefully.
Yeah.
He gets to practice against he's the Canadian Tony Parker.
Yeah.
When you think about it, you can see the similarities. The way he attacks the hole, he uses his speed, the way he uses his body.
He uses his floater.
Yeah. He's a steady guard, and he's a steady guard that comes off the bench that you can play at a combo guard, you can play the one. But what works well is that they put him at the one, and they put Lowry at the two, so Lowry can just concentrate on just going off.
And the way you can reference what Corey Joseph went through when he came into the NBA, it's like the equivalent of taking an MBA, getting a master's course in basketball, right? Learning from Coach Pop, being the protege for 3 years, or learning under Tony Parker's wing, getting to pick Tim Duncan's brain every day in practice. You know, having one-on-one competitions with Kawhi Leonard, like that does something to you, right?
Yeah,
especially if you take that on in a positive way. That does something to you. That helps you grow, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, and he's only like 22, 23 years old, you know. So right now at this stage, I mean, the sky's the limit for him. You never know what the other things that can come out of his career now, especially the way he's handled this first season coming back home, which. I've never been a fan of players playing for their home team just because there's so much added pressure, you know, of having like your family, your friends, your family, your friends, you know, like people asking you for tickets every night, you know, like club promoters asking you to host this party, like all that comes into it, right? And to be able to just, you know, kind of like put that to the side and still play the way he's been playing, like, so I salute him, man. Hats off to him.
Yeah, I agree.
But like I said again, I think with that said, I'm not saying that the Raptors will beat Cleveland. I do believe Cleveland will win, but like to me, what would be considered a successful season for the Raptors to me would be if
conference finals.
Yeah, if they get to the conference finals and they push Cleveland to about six games.
Yeah.
Right, like if they can do that, I think it's a very successful season. But to me, what if they get the number two seed, they make it to the conference finals, they play Cleveland, and they steal a road game?
And anything can happen.
And to me, at that point, anything can happen. And I do believe, I've said this, I really do believe this. I said this in the past. I even said this. I alluded to this in the last podcast that I had, that I think Toronto Raptors fans in the playoffs is some of the greatest fans you'll
fans
ever experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So that atmosphere, if you can get Cleveland now to start not trusting each other at certain points, and again, I agree, LeBron's going to come on like gangbusters, but if Kevin Love doesn't show up to play, if Kyrie doesn't, like if Kyle Lowry can play Kyrie to a standstill.
Yeah.
Now again, Jan. Now anything is possible.
You got a game. You got your game.
And like I said again, history has shown that. The history has shown again that depending on the right kind of pressure you apply to LeBron, you can crack him. Because even what I mentioned before, even in 2009, I think they played Orlando and they lost in six games. Like how did everybody was expecting?
I disagree.
You don't think so?
I don't think he'll crack this year. I don't like what he's gone through. Okay, when you're battle tested, you have those scars, those wars on you, on your life. You remember it and you walk through it.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying? I think the difference will be what Dwayne Casey has. The system has to be strong. Remember 2 years ago when Toronto faced up against Brooklyn.
Right.
You had Brooklyn had a first year coach in Jason Kidd. And Jason Kidd out-coached Dwayne Casey.
I agree with that.
Out of the gym. It was embarrassing. It was bad.
Yeah,
really bad.
I agree with that.
And hey, Dwayne Casey, listen, man, great guy. I got nothing bad to say about him. Great defensive coach, all that stuff. His offensive schemes aren't good enough. And I'm telling you, in the playoffs, it will get exposed.
Well, I'm not a Raptors fan necessarily, but I hope you're wrong in that case. I root for, you know.
I hope I'm wrong, too. I hope I'm wrong. But when you see basketball, I've seen enough games this year. Mm-hmm. And, like, I watched – if you watch the execution of some of these plays, these are hero shots that these guys are taking. Even the game when Lowry beat when Toronto beat Cleveland.
Yeah.
They almost coughed up the game. Well, Cleveland let one slip. The last play was an isolation play for Kyle Lowry to do a step back three. That's a tough shot.
Yeah, no, I agree. But you know what? And I know we got to go just now. But
Fair enough.
So I'll get to this point, and I'm just gonna say this part here, and I'll see if you agree with me or not. Excuse me. I think personally that Cleveland's window for winning a championship, I think it's closing faster than people realize.
I agree.
Right? And I say that because of a few factors here. Number one, as great as LeBron James is, he's one of the 10 greatest players in NBA history. He might be top five before it's all said and done, or probably is top five.
It will be.
Yeah, I'm not going to dispute that. Right? But he's been playing in the NBA for 13 years, right? At some point, he's going to start to slow down. Number two... Kyrie Irving has never been a fully healthy NBA player, to the point where I have this theory that sometimes certain bodies, no matter how physically gifted they are athletically, is that it's not made for professional sports, right? Uh-huh. And with Kyrie Irving, I mean, he's never come close to playing 82 games, right? Uh-huh. So his injury history scares me. To the point, I don't know if you can build the next 4 or 5 years off of him as incredibly talented as he is. I don't trust his health to be able to build championship aspirations for the next 5 years. And then the part with Kevin Love, you know, for all intents and purposes, Jan did not sign up for this. Well, actually, he literally did, because he signed a 5-year deal, which for the life of me, I can't understand why he did that, right? Mm-hmm. But again, it's year two. It's like we're close to year two of this situation right now, and he's still not comfortable.
If they lose, yeah, they're still not comfortable. You're right. If they lose, he's gone for sure.
Yeah, he's gone. It's a disaster
without a doubt.
And I had this conversation with one of my good friends, Headley. We talked about this all summer last summer when he signed that 5-year deal. I couldn't understand it, because number one, why sign that deal? Why don't you just pick up the option and play this year out? You could have got a max deal under the new TV deal, and this is probably one of the only times in NBA history where you can almost sign with almost any team that you want to, because everybody's going to have cap space, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so if I was him, I would have just said, you know what, let me just play this year out. Let me see what happens. You know, if we win a title, I'm going to stay. If we don't win a title now and I still don't fit in this offense, then you know what? I got to start looking at other options. Now, and here's the part where you might laugh, but to me, I'm like, I say that Toronto's one piece away. If he picked up his option and say things didn't work out this year, why couldn't he come to Toronto?
First of all, a lot of guys, what runs a lot of these players away from Toronto outside of the cold weather during the winter.
But, Jan, it's cold in Cleveland. It's cold in Cleveland.
Yeah, but they get taxed differently here than they do in the States.
Yeah, but it's not as bad as it was back in the day when the Raptors were playing in the Sky Dome. Like, yeah, they fix some of those tax situations.
Yeah, you're right. But it still runs a lot of these guys away. I think now it's a lot easier because they have a good core guy. So who wouldn't want to come here?
Right.
But the Cleveland situation is quite interesting. It's Tyronn Lue has taken over the team. They've had some ups and downs. They're still trying to find an efficient method so they could find their rhythm for the playoffs. I think he's trying to get them to play a faster tempo, as well as maintaining their defense, because they've scored more points, but their defense efficiency has dropped. So I think they were in the top five when Blatt was there. Now they dropped out of they're like in the teens now. So playoff wise, they're gonna have to pick that up big time. I think the right now it's all mental. Just for LeBron, it's hard for him because it's win now.
Yeah.
And I think the rest of the team is on different pages.
They're not quite ready just yet.
Yeah.
Not,
you know,
and that
they don't understand the pressure that this guy's facing. I don't think.
And
as a whole.
And for somebody like Kyrie though, can you blame him in a sense? Because you're still young.
I can. I do blame him because you got to do what's best for the team.
I agree.
He can score, but he needs to facilitate a little more.
I agree with that. He doesn't pass enough. But what I'll say is this though, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, right? Now, with Kyrie Irving, can you necessarily – I'm saying I don't know if you can necessarily blame him because he's a young guy that just stepped into the league and he's trying to – you know, like, he had success without LeBron. Like, mind you, of course, they weren't winning any games and they weren't coming close to making the playoffs. But,
okay,
you know, he's got accolades on his own, right? And like I said, like, if he – in a situation where now he's asked to sacrifice and win titles and stuff at this age, which is, yes, that is the normal thing to do. But for some guys, they still want to be the top dog, right? And I think that's the constant struggle that him and LeBron have because he's looking at it, well, yo, I can break this guy down and get 30 every night, you know?
Yeah.
Even with LeBron being there. But it's not conducive to them winning a title, right?
No.
But he's still young. That's how he's feeling. That's how his game is playing out, right?
As a player.
No, but hold on a second, Jan. But like, what I was going to say is that he's in like year five or four. No, sorry, I think he's in year five at this stage. He's not really caring about championships right now. He just wants to get awards. He wants to get all-star games. He wants to get endorsements. You know what I mean? Like this is the mentality that he has as a 24-year-old, right?
I hear you, but I don't agree with you. I think the mindset is you get a once in a lifetime generational player that's playing with you, that's coming in the end part of his prime. This doesn't come around too often. You got to make good of the opportunities that you get. It's not every day you get to go to the conference finals. Not every day you get to contend to go into the playoffs. Up until last year was the first time that they made the playoffs.
Yeah,
you have to embrace these moments. And I don't think his mindset. I think it comes a lot to do with maturity as a man, both on and off the court. But you got to do what's best for what's best for the team. Because at the end of the day, it's about the win.
You know what I'm saying? And again, I agree with you. But I think if he was on that wavelength mentally, you wouldn't be hearing these issues of him and LeBron having this lack of chemistry and stuff still to this day, or even to another extent, Kevin Love. Like, you wouldn't be hearing that to this day. They would just be clicking, and you would be talking about them right along with Golden State and San Antonio. But I think right now they're like a notch below them.
For some reason, the three of them don't mesh well. When there's two of them, they're fine.
Yeah.
Three of them, it's just that they're still trying to figure out what's that mix. Because Kevin Love offensively could do it. Defensively, it's terrible.
Yeah, he's not the greatest. But you got to look at it, and I've said this many times, like Kevin Love has been in the situation where he was considered one of the top 10 players in the NBA. Now, and starting games for the Western Conference for the All-Star games, right?
Yeah.
Now he's in a situation where 2 years in a row, he can't even make the East as a replacement.
Yeah,
you know, so I don't care who you are and how much money you get, you still got pride, you still got ego. At some point, that's messing with the back of his head. Like, he's sitting there man, did I make the right decision here?
Yeah,
like,
but a championship will quiet that quick, fast.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I agree.
Look at Bosch. He got destroyed.
Yeah, but the difference is with Bosch.
And now look at the respect that he has now that LeBron's gone. Look at all the respect that he's gaining back.
But you know what though, Jan? I think what the situation with Bosch is, I think Bosch was fully ready to take that secondary sidekick role. He was totally okay with that. I mean, that's why he went to Miami in the first place. Whereas Kevin Love, he was okay with going through with the trade. But I'm not totally sure I still think he's kind of sees himself as Batman a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, even though he's playing with LeBron James, I think in the back of his head, he's like, man, I can lead a team too. You know, and like I said, again, I think that's part of the struggle as well. Like, it's he doesn't know where to fit in still. Like, if you're an alpha dog, you're just like, you kind of treating it like Kyrie, where you're like, you know what, I'm just taking what I'm getting. He's still trying to find himself after 2 years. And I mean, I'm not saying he never will, but I mean, but Jan, this is by now this thing should be clicking.
Yeah, well, I say this much. They're using him more efficiently than it when Blatt was there, because when Blatt was there, it was a mess.
Yeah, I agree.
He wasn't even getting the ball in the post ups. Wasn't even posting up. At least now he's got this high post stuff. He's posting up. Even the game when they played OKC in Oklahoma, he went off because they did screen and roll with him and LeBron. Durant was switched off on him, and he just beasted Durant to the basket. It was either a foul or he scored.
Well,
they went to work off of that.
For sure, Cleveland has to. They gotta somehow pull that Minnesota Kevin Love out. Now, not in the sense of getting all the monster stats, but just that mentality. They for them to win the have a chance of really beating Golden State or even San Antonio if they end up beating Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. Potentially, I think for them to actually come away with a ring, they gotta see that old Kevin Love back, that mentality. They gotta see that back. If they can't pull that by in the next couple of months, not only is he being traded, but like I said again, you he's gotta regret even signing a 5-year deal with no opt out clause, you know, back with Cleveland. You know what I mean? Like I don't know where that's gonna go from there. And to be honest, I don't see them winning, and thereby I see them getting traded. So that's why I said a few minutes before, I really believe their window's closing faster than a lot of people realize.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I know we gotta go, so I want to just bring out this last segment here. It's something that I do when I do my write ups. It's called Sideline Notes, and basically what that consists of is just my random thoughts. And observations of what I see that's going on during that time period, whether it's in sports, music, pop culture, what have you. So, for example, like if this podcast was a blog that I was writing, I would in my sideline notes I would mention the Capital One MasterCard commercial with Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, and Samuel Jackson, and just talk about how old that those guys make me feel when I watch them on TV for 30 seconds. I don't know if you're watching March Madness,
yeah.
These guys are traveling the road to the Final Four. And every time I see them, and especially Barkley and Kenny Smith, I mean, Spike Lee. I don't know why I said Kenny Smith, Spike Lee. Like I used to idolize these guys, and now I see them and I can physically feel the gray hairs growing in my beard when I watch that commercial. Right. So I want to add a segment called Sideline Thoughts. Right to the podcast, and today's topic is this. A few days ago, I was watching a show that we grew up on called The Fresh Prince of Bel Air. Of course, you know that. So the episode I was watching was with Nia Long when she had Will Smith locked up in the cabin, right? And it got me to thinking. Will Smith has had some very beautiful women as his playing alongside him in the 6 years that he had his show. So it got me to thinking of some of the, I've just put a list together of some of the hottest women in my opinion that he's had, and I want to get your opinion because I kind of want to rank them just a little bit, right? So I'll give you a list and we'll quickly rank them from 5 to 1 before we go, right?
Okay.
And this is totally random. This is how I do the when I do my article postings and stuff. This is how I approach the sideline note. So this is totally random from what we've been talking about, right? So I'll give you the list right here. Vivica Fox, who played Jazz's sister in season 1.
Mm-hmm.
Jasmine Guy, who played Aunt Viv's protege also in season 1.
Okay.
You have Stacey Dash, who was the singer, I believe, in season 4 of Fresh Prince. And if you remember that episode, he ended up falling for her after she came to ULA and started, you know, performing and doing some songs and stuff. And he, I think at first he said he didn't like her and all this stuff here. Nia Long, Will Smith's
obviously,
girlfriend,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Elise Neal. Yes, and if for those who don't remember.
Have you seen her recently?
Whew.
We'll
get to that in a second. But for those who don't remember, she was the one that came in with Uncle Phil's college friend, who the young daughter, and Will ended up sleeping with the mother. And then Tyra Banks, who was also in season four, Will's ex-girlfriend, ex-friend from Philly. Now, I want to hear your list first, or how you want to rank them. So once again, Vivica Fox, Jasmine Guy, Stacey Dash, Elise Neal, Nia Long, Tyra Banks. How would you rank them? Go!
That was fine for you, right?
Sorry, that's six, but let's pick a top
that's
five from that.
So you can do what you want.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I will go with Tisha Campbell.
Tisha, I forgot about her.
Yeah, you got that one. Yeah.
I did.
Got him. Lela Rochon.
Ooh, I forgot about her, too.
Yeah, you did.
She was nice. She was nice, too.
Vivica Fox. Naomi Campbell. Nia Long.
Mm.
No. I'll take out Naomi Campbell and put Tyra Banks at two.
Okay, so list your five again from five to one. So you're going Tisha Campbell.
Who did I say? Tisha Campbell.
Lila Rochon. Mm-hmm. Vivica Fox, you said?
Tough. Yeah, I put Vivica Fox, but back in the days, man, I was huge on Vivica Fox, man.
Yeah, so was I.
Until
the plastic surgery demons got to her, but go on.
Yeah, she looks... Okay, I'll stay off that one. Tyra Banks, number two, and Nia Long.
Okay, here's my top five from the list I mentioned, but man, I forgot about Naomi Campbell. I kind of want to throw her in that now. Whew, boy. I might have to kick Vivica Fox out. okay, so let's go with this. Let's go number five. I'm gonna steal Naomi Campbell here. Let's go number five. Let's go with Tyra Banks. Number four, Stacey Dash. Man, this is a hard list, man. Number three, I'm gonna go with Naomi Campbell at number three, right?
Okay.
Number two, I'm going to go with Nia Long. I got to go with Elise Neal, number one.
Yeah.
Just the reason being, every time I see that episode, Jan, and she comes in with the striped leggings, it just, to this day, I still have to watch that episode. When it comes on TV, I still have to watch that part where she comes in with the leggings. Now, mind you, it's not, you're not seeing the, the body that you see today in terms of, the twerking generation. And the cyber asses that you're seeing now, but just every time I see that episode,
that's
man,
a real
it just,
woman.
Oh yeah,
you see a real woman. Listen, when I first went on Instagram, I started following all the women I had a crush on back in the days. Elise Neal was first on the list.
Pervert. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Elise Neal was first on the list I followed. Your list is good. I agree with it 110%. I just there's even others that we forgot, like Vanessa Williams, Kim Fields, Garcelle Beauvais,
yeah.
Victoria Rorell.
Yeah, I thought about those ones too. Yeah.
Queen Latifah, Queen Latifah was sexy in her own way.
Okay. It's like I said again, man. He's had the opportunity to play play alongside a lot of beautiful women, man, and Elise Neal to this day does it for me. And speaking of which, as you just mentioned, just Google Elise Neal at 50. Whew.
Yeah.
That's all I'll tell you. Whew.
Hey, high five. High five that one, man.
Whew. My God. If you can look at that at 50, boy. Hey. Anyways. on that note, I'm going to wrap up the podcast. Jan, I thank you so much for doing this today. It's been a pleasure for me. As I said again, I'd like to be able to extend my invitation to certain people, and you were always on my list, whether you knew it or not. Yeah, man, for sure. We go way back, you know, as much as we crack on each other, you know, we always have these conversations. It's always positive. You know, you come to my house, you play with my kids, you know, you know, so you're always I consider you a friend of the podcast. You can come back to the Av.
I'll let you finish your thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can come back to the Av anytime. You know,
my pleasure. I'll love to come back. I'd like to say this, my brother. Calvin, in life, I believe in life, you come across special people that come across your path. And I say you're definitely one of those people. And for that, I say thank you, my brother. You're from university, from playing against you in high school, you've always been a good guy. And I just say I'm very grateful and honored to have you as a friend. And I look forward to see the evolution of you as a person, as a father, as a husband, and as a great man, and of course of this great podcast that you're just starting. So I feel honored and blessed that you considered me for it today. So for that, I say thank you, my brother, and I appreciate it.
Nah, man, thank you so much, man. And I'm gonna shut down those rumors on Twitter talking bad about you, man. I swear, I'm gonna do that for you, man. I promise you.
Oh man, it's okay, man. Let them talk, man. Let them talk.
So once again, listeners of the podcast, I'd like to thank you for listening, tuning in once again. Don't forget to subscribe to the blog and the pod at SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Jan Michael Nation, this is Cal C on the Av Podcast, part of South Shore Av Radio. Until next time, folks. Peace. Before we go and end the podcast off, I just wanted to add one more thing to this. We've finished recording this podcast late Tuesday night, and pretty much right after the podcast, I went to bed. And when I woke up yesterday, I woke up to the news that Fife Dog from A Tribe Called Quest has passed away. And if you're anything like me, you were a major, major Tribe Called Quest fan. So yesterday, needless to say, it totally screwed up my morning. Fife Dog was definitely part of a major influence of my life, in terms of him putting out quality, that's an understatement, incredible music. And it's something that I will never forget. Outside of maybe Wu-Tang, Tribe Called Quest is probably my favorite group of all time, and it's not even close to anything else. Now, I just wanted to extend my condolences to his family, his friends, and to the culture of hip-hop, and more so the culture of music in general, because he has such a great influence on my generation. Rest in power, in peace, and with ease to Fife Dog, otherwise known as Malik Taylor. And on that note, I'll leave you with this.
I like them brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, or Haitian. Name is Fife Dog from the Zulu Nation. Told you in the jam that we could get down. Now let's knock the boots like the group H-Town. You got DVD all on your bedroom wall, but I'm above the rim and this is how I ball. A gritty little something on the New York street. This is how I represent over this here beat. Talking about you.
Yo, I took you out, but sex was on my mind for the whole damn route. My mind was in a frenzy in a horny state, but I couldn't drop rhymes cause you couldn't relate.
You let yourself go,
he said. You
couldn't relate. You let yourself go, he said.
You couldn't relate.
You let yourself go, he said. To him. 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 You let yourself go, he said. To him.